Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. For many decades, the United States has enjoyed a strong economy, a stable social structure, and a high quality of life. Much of this vitality can be attributed to a progression of innovations in science and technology. At the same time, these advances have made our society complex. Issues such as stem cell research, global warming, renewable energy resources, and questions surrounding medical treatments confront policymakers, educators, and citizens every single day. The National Academies is keenly aware of the important role the science community must play in engaging the public in the discussion of science and technology topics, because disengagement from science and technology will inevitably lead to less than optimal decisions among our citizenry, and fewer young people will pursue a career in the sciences. Though the content and practice of science can be complex, it's imperative that we embrace science and technology because of its increasing importance in our daily lives. Here at The Sounds of Science, we've been churning out new episodes for more than 2 years now. Clearly, it's our goal to communicate the findings of the reports produced at the National Academies. But our humble podcast certainly isn't the only way that the National Academies gets the word out. We write report briefs, publish booklets, produce videos, and sponsor websites as just a few other ways to make the science more widely available, with the collective aim of creating a more science-literate culture within the United States. But we're not alone in looking to pass along a wealth of science to anyone who will listen. Federal agencies, universities, and scientists are using new and innovative ways to share their findings with each other and the world. We recently invited Phil Plait to speak to us here at the National Academies about science communications online in a Web 2.0 world. Who, you might ask, is Phil Plait? Well, perhaps it's best to let him introduce himself.
People ask me what I do, and I think, you know, my initial answer is, well, I'm an astronomer. That's what I've been doing all my life. And that's not really true anymore. I don't do research astronomer. Now I'm a blogger. And that's really, you know, and president of the JREF, the James Randi Educational Foundation. And so that's sort of what I do. But I work at home. I have, you know, I hardly ever leave the house anymore. I'm sort of the definition of the geek who stays at home and doesn't do anything. So in fact, you know, putting on a tie is wonderful. It's a change from, you know, mostly not wearing pants around the house all the time.
Phil's blog, Bad Astronomy, is consistently ranked among the most popular online science columns and was even named one of Time.com's best blogs of 2009. Phil's blog is in good company on the internet. Besides Discover.com, which hosts Bad Astronomy, Seed Magazine, for example, sponsors a group of bloggers under the umbrella of something called simply Science Blogs, which is the largest online community dedicated to science. And we're happy to say, Discover and Seed are not alone. There are a number of other independent science blogs out there to be read and spread. The popularity of blogs and their acceptance couldn't have come at a better time for science. Many media sources are struggling. And unfortunately, science reporting is taking a pretty big hit.
Television journalists for science, print journalists for science, they're cutting back their departments. Blogging is taking over that slack, a lot of it. There are a lot of scientists who are now blogging.
While science reporting has been languishing in many media markets, the boom of scientist bloggers has created a unique opportunity for them to talk straight to the public and to their peers in a new collaborative way. Because the beauty of the blogosphere is that it's a conversation where readers get to talk back, offering their own insight and often enriching the resulting dialogue.
The good thing about blogs is that they build a community. This is where the real power of blogging is. When you have people that come back, it's not just sitting in front of the television watching it. They can actually participate in it because there can be a commenting section. If you go to my blog, underneath every ridiculous thing I'm ranting about that particular day, there are comments. And it's people being able to say what they want to say. And so there's interactivity between the community as well.
Blogging isn't the only platform on the web that promotes interaction. Social media networks are also proving to be useful in sharing of scientific information. Sure, in the early days, Facebook and MySpace seemed like the primo space in which to announce your latest beer pong scores. But these sites are no longer the exclusive playground of the like wow, LOL, OMG, TTFN, teeny bopper set. Many communications professionals now consider social networking sites a vital tool in reaching out to and connecting with their audiences. So should scientists.
Once again, this is a huge community building activity, and that is what we're trying to do in science. We want people to get this science. We want to build a community of a public that is educated and interested in science.
The interest in science can be even further enhanced through emerging technologies like Twitter, a free social messaging utility for staying connected real-time in 140-character bursts. Billed as the way to see what the world is doing right now, Phil himself has several Twitter feeds to his name. He tweets, which is the proper verb form for using Twitter, early and tweets often, maintaining one feed for broadcasting news updates and the other for tweeting shuttle launches.
So I jumped on Twitter and I thought, all right, this is totally useless. What am I going to be able to do? Basically, it's a web page where you can post whatever you're thinking, but you only get 140 characters. And as you can tell by me standing up here, I can barely say my name in less than half an hour. So what is Twitter going to do for me when I can only really say, you know, an average of 7 or 8 or 10 words? And then what happened was a gunman held two people hostage at Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. And I started tweeting it. So I was live tweeting the event. I was watching the news, putting it up on Twitter, and I started getting email from people thanking me because their company was blocking the news sites or they couldn't watch video or whatever. But Twitter was new. Nobody knew what it was. I had, you know, 10 followers, and they would email me and thank me about that. So it was pretty cool. And then I thought, maybe we're onto something here. And then NASA launched a space shuttle, and I live tweeted that, and that became very popular. So now I do that every time.
Tweeting has expanded beyond the individual user posting random haikus with the latest update on their cats, and it's now being used by companies and organizations, including the federal government, to enhance public awareness, understanding, and interest in what they're doing.
Twitter is becoming very popular. NASA is huge on Twitter now. They have their own Twitter feed where they will post things like what's going on with the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, when the next shuttle launch is going to be, what's going on. Astro Mike is an astronaut who was Mike Massimino. He was on the Hubble repair mission a couple of weeks ago last month. He was tweeting from orbit, so that was very cool to hear from him. Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter is tweeting first person. You know, I'm now in orbit around the moon. That sort of thing. It's fantastic. It's really cool. Kids love it.
Science communication is becoming increasingly diversified and specialized, just as are people's interest in the topic. Keeping pace with these changes is key to our ability to communicate science to the world.
When I was a kid, science communication was really just on television. There were a handful of television shows that would take care of this. You know, Mr. Wizard or whatever was on like that. And books. And so I would go to the library and I'd read books. Imagine that now, telling somebody to do that. But that has changed significantly. I don't know, and I don't think it's possible to get good statistics on where people are getting most of their science these days, because it's such a broad question. You'd have to really drill down and figure out what it is that people, when you're saying, where are you getting your science? What do you mean? Am I getting my science information, my science entertainment? You know, I'm going to see movies. What is it that you're talking about when you're talking about science?
At the risk of indulging in a little cross-promoting, you might want to check out some of the other ways that you can follow the National Academies online. The Science and Entertainment Exchange, a program of the National Academy of Sciences that connects entertainment industry professionals with scientists to bring more and better science to film and television, has a blog called The Exchange Files. It has a rotating group of columnists that include Hollywood legends Janet and Jerry Zucker, physicists Lawrence Krauss and Sidney Perkowitz, and CSI Miami writer Matt Partney. Both the Exchange and the National Academies Press have Facebook pages, and the NAP also has a Twitter feed that keeps followers up to date on everything that's happening at the press. And we think, we hope, that this is just the start. Many of the different divisions at the academies are looking at ways to use these technologies to make their messages more accessible, by which I mean easier to find and easier to digest. the National Academies may have only dipped its pinky toe into the vast pool of interactive web applications that make up Web 2.0. But science in general has already jumped in with great gusto. There are many fun and engaging ways to connect with science on the web right now. We strongly encourage you to seek them out, to participate, and to share. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.